All right, there hasn't been any blowback from the As Technology episode yet. That usually means there's something going on behind the scenes, so if you get hired by the Azzies to take me out, at least make sure you get paid well. And take out a good insurance policy, because that'll go down easy. Not that any of you crows would do such a thing, but I digress. What I wanted to say is that since the last one was so fruitful, I'm going to hit you again with another corporation episode. Coming to you straight from the most reliably biased source on the Matrix, broadcasting as a proud member of the Shadowcasters Network, I am Opti. Welcome to the Neo-Anarchist Podcast. This is the 7th of 10 special episodes about the 6th world's megacorporations. Corporations are slimy pieces of worm-ridden filth, and I care about as much for them as I do a festering pile of dog snot. But you must be informed about them so you aren't caught up in their machinations and corrupted. These episodes are the ones that the rich and powerful do not want you to hear, and therefore, you must. Neonet is a younger corp with old pieces. The heart of their empire has been through many changes, and I bet they aren't done yet. But there are a few things that need to be discussed before the information becomes useless. That's why Neonet has finally risen to the top of the corporate episode files. There's a lot more I need to tell you about Neonet that can go into this episode, but those bits also concern the other megas, so I will keep those for another episode soon to come. As for today's info, it's as relevant as it will ever be, and I need you to keep your eyes on Neonet starting right now and don't stop for the foreseeable future. With that in mind, here's the need to know about Neonet. Neonet is ranked number 8 on the corporate court, meaning they are number 8 in the world in terms of power and assets. I should note that less than a decade ago, Neonet was number 2. The story of what happened to drop them from 2nd to 8th should be clear when we're done here. Neonet's world headquarters was previously Boston in the United Canadian and American States, but for reasons discussed below, that headquarters has been moved to the city of St. Louis in the Confederated American States. Their corporate slogan is, "Tomorrow runs on Neonet," and their president and CEO is Richard Villiers. When describing Neonet, the metaphor that comes to my mind is Frankenstein's monster, cobbled together from bits and pieces of other corporations, and while it initially looks like a success, the result ends up being horror and destruction. Neonet is a public corporation and is diverse in almost every industry, including matrix infrastructure, cyberware, electronics, software, biotechnology, space, light weapons, and many more. But even with all of that, things are not looking good for Neonet. Their stock has been hemorrhaging for the past year. Not all is doom and gloom, but enough of it is that I can see hope in the future for Neonet to come crashing down. Unlike As Technology, which has the world fooled, Neonet has a big target painted on it, and hiding their flaws isn't an option anymore for reasons we'll discuss. Neonet is on everyone's lips, but not in a good way. So without further ado, here is the rise and hopefully the fall of Neonet. In order to give you a history of Neonet in a way that'll make sense, I have to go way back before Neonet began. Way back to 2012. Just after the Awakening, the first actual intercorporate war took place between Karuba Corp and BMW. To prevent this sort of thing from happening again, and the high business costs that came along with it, 7 of the world's largest corporations joined together to form what they called the Intercorporate Council. These corporations were BMW, Ares Industries, Shiawase, Misuhama, Oro, Karuba, and JRJ International. I bring this up because the Intercorporate Council became known as the Corporate Court, and the charter of the court states that the 7 founding corporations will always have a seat on the court, making whoever holds them an automatic AAA-rated corporation. This automatic seat on the court is what is referred to as the golden ticket of the corporate court. 3 corporations, Horizon, Evo, and Wuxing, have been made AAA corporations even without having a golden ticket. The ones that do have the golden tickets are as follows. Ares Industry obviously has its own seat, as do Shiawase and Misuhama. BMW is now owned by Sauter Group, and thus SK has the BMW seat. Renraku now has the Karuba seat. Oro Corporation became As Technology, and that leaves JRJ International. JRJ International is still pretty big fish, even without the golden ticket, but in the early part of the century, they were huge. While the Intercorporate Council was being formed, another formation was taking place in Japan. Yamana Electronics, founded by Korin Yamana, and Takeda Industries, owned by Kiyoshi Nakatomi, joined together in 2011 to stop the Pacific Rim Bank from staging a hostile takeover of Takeda. This temporary alliance proved fruitful for both parties, so they decided to continue on as partners despite the growing hostility between them. In 2017, the company officially became Fuji Industrial Electronics, and branched out into Hong Kong, Australia, and North America. In the latter years of the 2020s, Fuchi began to focus production on immersive cyber interfaces. Working with Chubetsu Japanese Intelligence, Fuchi produced one of the first privately designed cyber terminals. In February of 2029, computer networks worldwide were attacked by a devastating computer virus, causing the crash of 29. A top-secret task force, codenamed Echo Mirage, was dispatched using cyber terminals into the world's computer networks to eliminate the virus. The first team was wiped out, but the second team, later that year, began to deal with the virus and, despite heavy losses, made headway. It took a while, but the things Echo Mirage learned during those years using cyber terminals was invaluable, including making them faster, smaller, and more immersive. 2 years later, the virus was dealt with, but only 7 members of Echo Mirage's 32 operatives still lived. Depending on who you ask, 4 or 5 of those members moved into the private sector, hoping to get rich on what they learned of cyber terminal technology. I only bring up Echo Mirage to give context for this next part. Ken Roper and Michael Eld, 2 of those Echo Mirage survivors, founded a company called Matrix Systems of Boston, and in 2033 showed off their prototype cyberdeck, smaller and faster than anything that had come before. Richard Villiers, remember that name, invested heavily in the company, acquiring 49% of its shares by 2034. And in 2034, Ken Roper and Michael Eld's company, Matrix Systems of Boston, released the first gray market cyber terminal, calling it the Portal. Unfortunately for them, 6 weeks from the day that Portal was released, the founders of the company, Ken Roper and Michael Eld, were both killed in what the police determined were random incidents. It was discovered the next day that Matrix Systems' mainframe crashed and all data regarding the Portal was lost, as were all Portal prototypes. After the deaths of its founders, Richard Villiers became the sole owner of Matrix Systems of Boston. Meanwhile, Fuchi Industrial Electronics had been busy trying to keep up with the innovations in cyber technology and were determined not to be left behind. So only months after Roper and Eld died, Richard Villiers turned up at Fuchi headquarters with all of the research data for the Portal cyber terminal, along with the prototype Portal machines. Villiers offered Fuchi the research, data, and prototypes, along with control of Matrix Systems of Boston for 1/3 of Fuchi and control over Fuchi's operations in the Americas. 1/2 of Fuchi, Korin Yamana, was all for the deal. However, Kiyoshi Nakatomi, the other half, was not. Fortunately for Villiers, days after the rejection, Nakatomi was killed by the guy who drove his limo. Kiyoshi Nakatomi's son, Shike, inherited the father's part of the company, and when Villiers made his offer again, both Yamana and Nakatomi accepted, meaning Yamana, Nakatomi, and Villiers all had 1/3 ownership of Fuchi Industrial Electronics. 2 years later, Fuchi released the world's first portable cyber terminal, the CDT-1000, about the size of a desktop computer. This emerging market rocketed Fuchi to megacorporate status. In 2038, Richard Villiers purchased a majority of JRJ International stock and thus purchased a seat for himself on the corporate court, making Fuchi a AAA megacorporation, where they remained as the reigning sovereign of Matrix Software and Consumer Electronics for over decades. Along the way, Villiers brought on a former UCAS Army sniper named Miles Lanier to be the head of Fuchi Internal Security. Lanier was highly respected by everyone familiar with his work, and he soon became Villiers' right-hand man. Fuchi's fortunes began to change in 2057 with the death of the Great Dragon and president of the UCAS, Dunkelzahn. Included in Dunkelzahn's will were 2 items that upset the balance of power in Fuchi. First, Big D left 2% of Fuchi's stock to Richard Villiers, giving him the primary shareholder position and leverage, even if small, over Yamana and Nakatomi. But the more devastating gift was that Dunkey left 4 million shares of Renraku Computer Technologies to Miles Lanier. That was enough for Miles to get a seat on Renraku's board, and word was that Miles began packing his things for Renraku even before the announcement was finished. From what I've been able to dig up, Lanier and Villiers had a loud, public, and nearly violent exchange over what Villiers called a betrayal, and the two men ended their partnership and friendship in front of all the cameras. Lanier proved to be every bit as helpful to Renraku as he was to Fuchi, and more. Showing them Fuchi security flaws and tipping them off to Fuchi corporate secrets, Renraku began to blow past Fuchi in the Matrix and electronics markets. I should stop here and note 2 things. First, Fuchi wasn't taking this lying down. Miles Lanier survived multiple assassination attempts, many nearly successful. Second, Yamada Nakatomi became increasingly suspicious of Richard Villiers, who they thought might have been leaking information to Renraku and Misuhama Computer Technologies, as both companies seemed to be taking tech right out from under Fuchi and using it to outsell them in most markets. As a result, Yamada Nakatomi began actively seeking to get rid of Villiers by any means necessary. Meanwhile, Miles Lanier gave Renraku what they needed to take over many of Fuchi's holdings, and by 2059, Fuchi was reeling, causing Yamada Nakatomi to stall their attempts on trying to attack Lanier. A major lawsuit between Fuchi, Misuhama, and Renraku prompted an emergency meeting on the corporate court. The court deliberated for 18 hours, finally came out with a decision that Lanier was indeed guilty of corporate misdeeds and would have to give up his seat on Renraku's board of directors, turn himself in to Fuchi to answer for his crimes, and to pay an unspecified sum in reparations. Well, Miles Lanier did quit Renraku and turn himself in to Fuchi, but he also began to sell all of his Renraku stock at below market price to the Zurich Orbital Bank. This plummeted Renraku's stock prices and made Renraku open to being strong-armed by Zurich Orbital. At this point, Richard Villiers could see that his working relationship with his Japanese partners was no longer workable. Using his shell company, Cambridge Holdings, Villiers began silently buying up large portions of Fuchi America's assets. Along the way, Richard, Dick, Ricky Boy, headed back to Boston and built himself a new base of operations there. To add to all of Fuchi's woes, in July of 2059, Fuchi's Yamada loyalist corporate court justice David Hoag was killed when his semi-ballistic flight crashed into Seattle's Redmond Barons. This effectively eliminated any leverage the Japanese factions of Fuchi had on the corporate court. In October, just a few months later, Villiers began to sell off half of his stock in Fuchi, causing Fuchi stock prices to plummet. Yamada Nakatomi began buying up all of that stock in hopes of gaining a controlling share of Fuchi, but only having the effect of starting a bidding war and driving Fuchi stock prices to over triple what they had been. It was at the peak of Fuchi stock prices that Villiers sold his remaining half of Fuchi for an astronomical sum and made hundreds of millions of new yen on the deal. Simultaneously, Villiers took all of the transferred Fuchi America's assets along with his personal holdings and incorporated them into a brand new corporation called Novatech. Perhaps most importantly, Novatech also included JRJ Industries, who held the golden ticket corporate court seat, guaranteeing AAA status for Novatech from the get-go. After buying up all of Villiers' shares, the Yamada and Nakatomi factions of Fuchi each held 49% of Fuchi stock. The remaining 2% was held by Samantha Villiers, Richard's ex-wife. In order to give Novatech a better chance of survival, she made a deal with Yamada for the remaining 2%, giving Yamada control of Fuchi in exchange for a one-year truce between Fuchi and Novatech. For her trouble, she was granted a fabulously lucrative job at Novatech as their vice president, keeping business in the family. Of course, Shike Nakatomi was furious about this deal and saw it as the final insult that he would bear. He purchased the 4 million shares of Renraku that Lanier left to Zurich Orbital and merged his Fuchi Asia with Renraku, seeing this as the perfect way to eventually get back at Villiers. As icing on the cake, their last remaining Fuchi justice on the corporate court, Lynn Osborne, abandoned Fuchi and joined Villiers and Novatech, causing Fuchi to lose its AAA status. Seeing where the ship was heading, Yamada merged Fuchi Pan-Europa with Shiawase Corporation as a wedding gift when Koren Yamada married Misuko Shiawase, a woman 60 years younger than the 90-year-old man. The following year, on July 28, 2060, with its three divisions spread between Renraku, Shiawase, and Novatech, Fuchi Industrial Electronics was officially dissolved, and in its place, Novatech had arisen. Looking back, it is clear that Richard Villiers, Samantha Villiers, and Miles Lanier played everyone, including the corporate court. Villiers and Lanier were never upset with one another, but in fact cooked up a scheme by which Fuchi would be so weakened that Villiers could walk away with the best parts of it, along with a tremendous amount of money. Lanier played his part well, and while he may have lost a huge amount of money himself and been publicly shamed, all of that was washed away when Villiers refunded him all that money and promoted Lanier to corporate and personal security chief at Novatech, the same position he had once held at Fuchi. Now, Novatech was solely under the guidance of Villiers, and they had Renraku's secrets to play with in the same way Renraku once had Fuchi's. And if that doesn't paint a picture about how devious Richard Villiers is, you haven't been paying attention. Now, across the Atlantic from Boston, there was another corporate story that is just as important for what comes next. So put a pin in Novatech and Villiers for now, and let's head way back to 2017, 43 years before Novatech. That year, Neuronet Development, Transys Corporation, and two other tech companies in the United Kingdom merged in order to offer competition to Japanese and American tech companies, which were dominating the market. This merger became the corporation Transys Neuronet. One of Transys Neuronet's earliest achievements was becoming the first company ever to successfully replace a human limb with cybernetics. When they gave world-famous violinist Leonardo Bartoli a replacement cyber hand, the world was paying attention. Into the 2050s, Transys Neuronet continued to remain competitive with such powerhouses as Renraku, Fuji, and Misohama, despite weathering an attempted takeover from their main European rival, Zeta Imchem. This competitiveness was mostly due to two factors. One, it had an unrelenting passion to hire the best and brightest talent from all over Europe and allowed them to pursue odd, offbeat, and whimsical pet projects. And two, Transys Neuronet was being funded by Hildebrandt Kleinfurt Bernal, the largest European bank, as well as the Great Dragon Keledir. It became clear that sometime in the 40s, Keledir had begun steering the ship, pointing research towards non-profit-based projects such as cyberware for satyrs or dragons. Of course, this is fascinating stuff, but even if awake creatures showed a desire to have cyberware, which most do not, the market for such products would be very limited. As a corrective measure, HKB Bank stepped in and gained control of the Transys board in 2054. Throughout the 2050s, HKB, Keledir, and Zeta Imchem fought for internal control of Transys up until 2063, when Keledir reasserted control and restored things to how he desired them. Staying in Europe for the moment, we had to leave Transys Neuronet and back up once again in time. In 2019, two global telecommunications companies, Ericsson and Nokia, merged to form the Finland-based Erica Corporation. The CEO of Erica was a brilliant fellow by the name of Anders Malmstein. By 2048, Erica had reached AA status, and in 2059, Erica announced the Wireless Matrix Initiative, by which Erica would build upon its massive cellular network and create a wireless matrix by 2064. By the time the Wireless Matrix Initiative was set to unveil, Malmstein had politically and economically made Erica the most powerful and nearly omnipotent corporation in Finland. This is where we'll pick back up with Transys Neuronet. In the years leading up to the unveiling of the Wireless Matrix, Transys had become a strong supporter and partner with Erica on their Wireless Matrix Initiative. After the first Universal Matrix conference held in Scotland, Transys Neuronet and Erica agreed to merge together and form Transys Erica, creating a virtual monopoly on the upcoming Matrix infrastructure in Europe and elsewhere. As the merger unfolded, Keledir, Transys Neuronet's head of research and development and major shareholder, tried to gain a majority of Erica's stock, putting him in the lead role of the new merger. Unfortunately for the Great Dragon, Anders Malmstein snuck behind Keledir's back and made a deal with the Dragon's enemies, the Hildebrandt Kleinfurt Bernal Bank. HKB sold Malmstein their shares in Transys Neuronet, and Anders Malmstein became the CEO of Transys Neuronet, while Keledir remained in charge of R&D, like always. Now that all the actors are in place, we turn back to Novatek. Villiers' schemes had worked perfectly, positioning him and the company Novatek as the premier new megacorporation, and their future looked incredibly bright. The brand was popular, and Villiers was aggressive in buying up smaller businesses and streamlining production of Matrix tech, software, and consumer electronics. Fuji Towers in Boston were rechristened as Novatek Towers, and the day is marked as Ascension Day, a Villiers-backed corporate holiday. However, not everything was fated to go Novatek's way. A former Fuji employee named Art Dankwalter held Richard Villiers responsible for the loss of his job and his downward spiral into alcoholism and BTL addiction. So when Dunkelzahn left Arthur $34 billion in his will as a repayment of a debt to his ancestor, Dankwalter was so out of it that he didn't even claim the prize for 2 years. During those 2 years, Art had been trying and failing to get a job at Villiers' new Novatek company, and Art bore a grudge. Once he became a billionaire, Dankwalter soon began going after Villiers, who he blamed for all the trouble in his life and pledged to ruin him at all costs. In the meantime, Novatek was doing fine, but they were not doing as well in the short term due to the enormous debts Villiers had incurred trying to get Novatek off the ground. That's why, when Dankwalter began spending his enormous wealth to cause Novatek problems, Villiers didn't have the fluid cash he needed to fight back. Art orchestrated plans to have creditors come calling for Novatek's debts, and that's when and why Villiers decided to take Novatek public and begin to sell shares of the Novahot Corporation. Unknown to Villiers, or anyone else, a group called Winter Knight partnered up with a rogue AI and a bunch of dissonant-worshipping otaku, and were using Innovatech's initial public offering, set to be the biggest in history, to bring about the Matrix Crash of 2064, or Crash 2.0. Crash 2.0 held up Kaladir's plans of grabbing back control of Transys Erica, while also creating a massive distrust in the Novatech name due to allegations that Novatech was somehow tied to Winter Knight and the crash. As an aside, Art Dankwalter was dealt with very early after the crash began, when a solid projectile fired from orbit, called a Thor shot, erased him from existence, along with the nuisance he posed to Richard Villiers. Recovering from the crash, Richard Villiers saw that his beloved company was vulnerable to takeover in the aftermath of the crash, so he began to seek out like-minded friends. Those friends came in the form of Transys Erica. Throughout 2064, Villiers was having secret meetings with Anders Malmsteen, and as a result of these meetings, Novatech merged with Transys Erica, forming the corporation that we now call Neonet. Richard Villiers took the role of CEO, while Anders became the chairman of the board. Kaladir once again seemed outmaneuvered and was relegated to the research and development department of the world's second largest megacorporation. I'll drop one real quick note here that I'll come back to, and that is the fourth largest shareholder behind those big three is Translatvia Enterprises. They purchased large amounts of Novatech stock and now had a good deal of Neonet stock as well. Stay tuned for more on them. For more than a decade since Neonet formed, it grew in stature and influence. In particular, due to its place as the prime investor in the Wireless Matrix Initiative, they were the first corporation that had been approached by Danielle de la Mar when she wanted to create the new Matrix that took effect in 2075, which is the current Matrix we all know and love. That success further propelled Neonet to continue their upward crawl. And another upside for Neonet was that the new Matrix allowed them to control the flow of information, resulting in protection from another scandal like Winternet from afflicting their bottom line again. Neonet had a pretty swell thing going on in Boston. They were not the only show in town, but they might as well have been. Richard Villiers was the face of Boston and Neonet, and the picture of a Boston native made good. After the crash, the East Coast Stock Exchange moved back to Manhattan, but Neonet's biz partner stayed on in Boston. Such was the trust in Neonet and the brand Villiers created. For years, JRJ Industries, Commonwealth Enterprises, and Silveril Investments also did well, churning out even more revenue for Neonet. Before getting into Neonet's present and future, I'm going to pause here to discuss their culture and personnel. We'll come back to what Neonet is up to now and where they're going in a bit. While Neonet was successful in bringing together myriad companies under a single umbrella and making billions of nuyen doing it, the one thing they're terrible at is unity. There's no single vision that drives Neonet in the same way that military corporate culture drives Ares or Lofir drives Seder Krupp. Rather, Neonet is a three-headed monster that often can't decide which way to go and begins to bite at itself. Despite this, the intercorporate competition between the factions belonging to Villiers, Malmsteen, and Kaladir have not necessarily hurt the brand, but rather have emerged as a semi-viable business model. Of course, Neonet deploys a great number of sophisticated management tools to keep everyone in line, ranging from semi-autonomous computer programs to complex algorithms detailing which top-performing brands get more funding to practices resembling attitude and thought control of employees. Still, the absence of a unifying corporate identity has done nothing to mitigate the unchecked divisions that continue to grow between Neonet's subsidiaries. In other words, loyalty runs deep for the three major shareholders, but not for Neonet itself. Neonet got by for many years based on financial management and their R&D department. Villiers and Malmsteen took care of finances, while Kaladir, based out of Caerleon in Wales, had propelled Neonet's research and development to be second to none. All other subsidiaries enjoy a great deal of autonomy, with the aforementioned competitions driving everything, having the long-term effect of three major shareholders effectively competing with each other, using their individual assets as proxies on their behalf. Miscommunication from one faction's subsidiary to another, along with passive-aggressive resistance to rival projects, even sabotage, have kept Neonet from fulfilling its potential over the last decade and a half. Running the shadows for Neonet has always been rather pleasant. Since way back in the day, Richard Villiers and Miles Lanier have been using deniable assets to get their dirty work done. Even now, the factions regularly use runners to foil the plans of their intercorporate rivals. Many of the top brass, Villiers, Verghese, and Malmsteen, have their own assets on retainer, and of course Kaladir has his Knights of Rage, so you likely won't get jobs directly from them. But everyone below the big boys has need of your services. In fact, Black Ops spending is incorporated into the budget of even smaller subsidiaries. As a plus, Neonet loves return business. If you do well for them, they'll come back over and over. In the past, Miles Lanier has coordinated much of the shadow work for Neonet, and he's also prevented the squabbling between the branches from getting out of control and hurting the larger company. But as you'll see in the next section, Miles hasn't been a factor for some time now. As for the personalities of Neonet, there are quite a few to discuss. Richard Villiers is still the main guy to keep an eye out for. At most recent count, he controlled 22% of Neonet and operates as its CEO. Villiers directs day-to-day management of Neonet's top levels and acts as the face of the company. Even with his ex-wife's shares acting in concert with his, Villiers still doesn't have the votes to get his plans through without making deals with the other factions. As of a few years ago, Villiers found himself presiding over a company that looked dangerously like Fuji. Infighting and deadlock, which led to the company's demise, was present here at Neonet as well. The fact is, Kelladier's vision for the company is just not compatible with Villiers. Kelladier wants more funding for ever more esoteric projects, while Villiers is seemingly not dealing well with Neonet's complicated financial structure, as everyone hoped. His relationship with Miles Lanier aside, Richard Villiers has always been a loner. But as long as he had the support of his ex-wife Samantha and his right-hand man Lanier, Villiers was going to be okay. Which brings me to this next part. Villiers no longer has the support of Miles Lanier, because Miles has been missing for years. Lanier had kept his eyes on internal security of Neonet, and he'd done a great job as far as anyone could have hoped for. Unfortunately for Neonet, and especially for Richard Villiers, Miles disappeared sometime in 2072. For a while, it looked as if Lanier was caught up in some inter-corporate politics between Kelladier and Translatvian Enterprises. Miles was spotted near Prague by Kelladier's Knights of Rage, and speculation went wild. Folks blamed both Translatvian and Kelladier for Miles' disappearance, and meanwhile, Villiers was losing his firm grip on Neonet. As it turns out, neither Kelladier nor Translatvian were behind Lanier's disappearance, at least not directly. In 2074, Miles Lanier gained access and posted to the shadow host known as Jackpoint. There, he revealed that he had been infected with what came to be known as Cognitive Fragmentation Disorder, or CFD. This CFD had caused another personality to take up residence in his own mind, and at times, this alternate personality would take over and act on Lanier's behalf, causing erratic behavior and spells of unaccounted-for lost time. It appears Lanier is still at large, having left the company for his and its own good, but he no longer holds sway at Neonet and is MIA as far as the world is concerned. As for Richard Villiers' other allies, they pretty much all boil down to those he is related to. Samantha Villiers, as previously noted, was Richard Villiers' ex-wife. She controlled a decent percentage of Neonet, and is nearly as inspiring and ruthless as he is. In fact, many sources claim that their competitiveness with each other was what ended their marriage. Regardless of their marital status, she remained a loyal and steadfast supporter of Richard, even if their arguments behind closed doors rattled the corporate HQ. But she's now dead. She passed last year, 2077, the victim of a hired hit, although the media won't tell you that. Richard came out publicly and said all the right things, but public displays of emotion have never suited him, so don't expect to see him crying over it. Neonet Seattle is still trying to cover from losing her, and the corporate vultures are still circling her assets even a year later. Martin Villiers is Richard Villiers' brother. He used to have a decent chunk of Neonet stock, but recent events have made that a moot point, as I'll discuss briefly. In contrast to his brother, Martin always seemed like a cool chummer, real even-tempered, not really playing in the corporate manipulation bit. What Martin really loved was Boston, and spent most of his time there, building and rebuilding, especially after the crash and Winter Night's terrorism. In time, Martin became the second most revered figure in Boston after Richard, and many analysts speculated that Martin might run for local or federal office, and he probably would have won. In the initial public offering of Neonet, Martin made millions, helped along by Franklin Associates. Franklin is in deep with Translatvian Enterprises, which made Martin an interesting pawn of theirs until recently. At the moment, no one really knows what Martin's fate is. And I haven't spoken about the Boston lockdown yet, and I will, but for now, just know that when Boston was closed, Martin was trapped on the inside. Control of his stock was left to his niece Caroline, who has taken them over in light of his predicament. Richard and Samantha Villiers only had one child, Caroline, although most call her Kara. She grew up rather hard for the daughter of one of the world's richest people, but all of those kidnapping threats, assassination attempts on her uncles and father, and a generally cold upbringing have made her the ruthless spawn that her daddy always knew she could be. Richard seems to have taken to a more business-like relationship with Kara recently, and he's begun to trust her with ever-increasing responsibilities. Thankfully for him, this trust seems to have come at the perfect time, because she now controls 11% of Neonet, thanks to the shared inheritance from her mother and her uncle Martin, not to mention a smaller but important piece left to her by Miles Lanier. It appears that Richard is grooming this red-haired beauty of a daughter, now in her 40s, to rule his empire someday. The last of the Villiers clan is Darren. He's the only metahuman born to a family of humans, but this dwarf also inherited adept abilities in the deal. Darren ran shadow ops for Richard as far back as Novatech and Fuchi, and made the move to Neonet along with the rest of his family. Oddly, Darren tried to join Kelladir's Knights of Rage right after the merger with Transcis Erica happened, and this strained relationships with his CEO brother. Most recently, Darren was working with Samantha to try to gain more leverage over Richard, but those plans have not worked out how he would have liked. Frankly, Darren, thanks to being a dwarf, will likely outlive them all and inherit billions. Moving on from the Villiers clan, Anders Malmsteen is no small part of Neonet. As chairman of the board and owner of 18% of the company, this dwarf wields considerable weight in deciding its future. Malmsteen is fairly quiet and makes it a point to not have a personal agenda other than the good of the company. If he does have an agenda, it's being a thorn in the side of Sauterkraut's European endeavors. Anders spends most of his time in Finland, concerning himself primarily with Erica, at least on a day-to-day basis. But even without Neonet, Malmsteen is one of the most influential business people in Europe. While not nearly as extravagant, Malmsteen's network of contacts is as large as Johnny Spinrad's, and many prefer dealing with Malmsteen because he's so down-to-earth. Because so many in Europe are powerless to stop Sauterkraut's domination, Malmsteen is a welcome force. If Neonet ever goes away, Malmsteen is going to come out smelling like roses. He's been quietly investing in emerging world markets, and wherever Erica lands, they're going to be a powerful corp in their own right. They were before, but have only become stronger in the years since the wireless matrix has become the only matrix. In the meantime, Malmsteen is offending no one, making as many friends as he can, and busting his hoop to make sure Erica's worth remains high. Next up is Swaraj Verghese. Verghese was a top executive at Erica, primed to take the CEO spot after Malmsteen. After the merger to Neonet, however, and Malmsteen's maneuvering to the top, he left Erica. Surprisingly, he has emerged as TransLatvia's representative on the board of directors of Neonet, and now votes on behalf of their 11% stock. Not just a vote on the board, however, Verghese is the second most recognizable Neonet representative behind Richard Villiers. Verghese is a skillful negotiator and is often able to play TransLatvia's agenda by riding the middle between Villiers and Kelladir. He also paints Neonet in a softer light than the world would otherwise see if they focused on the cutthroat Villiers or the great dragon Kelladir. Verghese's voice is a respected and powerful mediator on the Neonet board, albeit for TransLatvia. Sounds great, right? Well, maybe. A well-respected source has given me data suggesting that Swaraj Verghese used to be known as Sasha Wojciechowski, also known as the Hammer within the European Mafia. Yeah, that's right. Seems as if Neonet are also in bed with the mob, whether they know it or not, thanks to TransLatvia. Speaking of TransLatvian enterprises, the owners of the holding company remain mysterious. Way back when Richard Villiers began removing assets from Fuchi Americas, he used TransEuropa Holding to house those assets until Fuchi went down. TransEuropa was owned by the Mafia, however, and instead of selling those assets back to Villiers, they were placed in TransLatvia Enterprises, which was then sold to an unknown third party, who still retain those assets today. Back then, it was 24% of Novatech. Now it is 11% of Neonet. These guys are based in Tallinn, Estonia, at least on paper, but little else is known about them. When asked, Verghese claims that most of the data was lost in the Matrix crashes of 29 and 64, although that answer is less satisfying each time he tells it. Perhaps the most troubling thing about TransLatvia is who they are rumored to be connected to. Now again, these are just rumors, but I have heard that about them being connected to a secret European cabal of vampires, or Ordo Maximus, or the Vatican. But it could also be that the owners are vampires in Ordo Maximus, but I can't say for sure. It's also very possible that the connections with the European mob are still alive and strong, in which case the Ordo Maximus and Vatican connections would be through the mob, and not necessarily through TransLatvia itself. As for what I think, given that Wojciechowski is known to me as a member of Ordo Maximus, I'd say that the mob connection is of secondary concern. No matter what troubles Neonet is facing at the moment, at least they know they have one friendly face on the corporate court. Neonet's court chair is Chief Justice Lynn Osborne, and as a matronly orc, she works tirelessly on behalf of Neonet in orbit. The conventional wisdom is that Osborne will stay on the court for a long time, regardless of what happens to Neonet, due to the JRJ golden ticket, and whoever ends up with her will be lucky that she did stay. Most notable in her tenure were the rulings that she made within the last decade against Lothair and Sauterkraut. Safe to say that she is not in the Great Dragon's Christmas card list, if there is such a thing. I've saved Kaladir for last because, number one, I hate talking about dragons, and number two, his involvement is so fragging complicated and far-reaching that I didn't want to get distracted. The great dragon Kaladir awakened near Caerleon, Wales, in 2011. Since becoming a financial backer of Transys Neuronet, Kaladir has had one thing on his mind: research. And I'm not exactly sure why he likes it so much in general, but the time between his awakening and now, a few major events have occurred in which Kaladir has tried to research solutions to. I'm saving those for a big episode reveal later that I mentioned, so for now I'll just say that he's doubled down on his R&D since he began so long ago, and in fact this drive keeps Transys Neuronet, then Transys Erica, and finally Neonet at the forefront of tech markets. Kaladir is only secondarily concerned with making money. He wants to experiment, to learn. Many consider what Kaladir is doing to be beyond the acceptable limits of morality, such as augmenting animals, paracritters, and even dragonkind. But extraterritoriality and the dragon's sense of ethics have got him this far, and he doesn't seem like he is going to slow down. He's also pretty deep into experimenting with AI and technomancers. The dragon advocates for AI, technomancer, and metasapient rights, and seems does not want to rest until the line between organics and machines is obliterated. But as far as Neonet goes, Kaladir is the number 3 shareholder with 13%. Fortunately, this doesn't seem to bother Kaladir, as he doesn't seem to want to run the place. He just wants enough of the company to get them to leave him alone. Interestingly, despite all the tech that Kaladir is into, he fills the gap of magical expertise at Neonet as well. As a great dragon, he has more expertise in that field than any group of people could hope for. It also doesn't hurt that the dragon is seeking ways to mix magic and machines as well. Recently, Kaladir had moved many of his projects from Caerleon and Albuquerque to a secure facility underneath Neonet's Boston headquarters in order to consolidate his research energies and personnel. That decision had the direct effect of catalyzing the Boston lockdown when his research project got loose. Looking forward to the future, Kaladir has begun to meet with various individuals trying to plan for a future in which he might not be welcome at Neonet or anyone else. He has been spending a lot of time at his home in Caerleon, where, coincidentally, Richard Villiers went to visit him in person not too long ago. What they spoke of, none can say, but Art Vogel from Ares has also been seen meeting with the dragon, leading to speculation that Kaladir might defect to Ares. While I don't find that likely, I'll leave it here for completion's sake. Now, it may not be relevant at this moment to speak of Neonet's assets and subsidiaries, as there is currently a massive sell-off of Neonet property. However, once again for completion's sake, here's where they stood as of a few months ago. The major internal divisions of Neonet are Fuji Industrial Electronics, the part that used to be Fuji Americas, JRJ International, Mangadyne, Novatech, and Transys Erica. Up until recently, Neonet owned Manadyne as well, but Cale Winters bolted and took his sister's corp with him. Look for them to hook up with another AAA corp or get swallowed up by another mega. The Novatech brand still makes the top charts for consumer electronics, and they have great market share in public and corporate markets as well. Erica still focuses on industrial and government sectors, remaining deeply involved in infrastructure projects and autonomous computer programs, but continues to expand into media, SimSense, and educational projects. Transys continues on as Neonet's biotech and cybernetic branch, and has benefited much from the addition of Novatech's expertise. Augmentation with nanites, wireless capability, and built-in medical abilities are where the market is headed. Of course, Kaladir remains the active force behind all they do, and much of their research never ever is going to make it into the hands of the public. SNS AgriCorp is an incredibly important food growth and production label for Neonet. They've had a great setup in which they have the land and water rights along the east coast of the Americas. Their goal was to snatch food production markets in the UCAS and CAS away from the Azzies, but that looks less and less likely with recent events. The rest of Neonet's assets break down pretty much along industry lines. Their matrix subsidiaries include Aurora Design, Bell Mead Comm, Bristol Optics, China Cable, CompuForce, Cyberspace Development Corp, FTL Technologies, Fuji Orbital, Matrix Systems, Pulse, Simplex Software, and Wolfware. Their main financial assets are Commonwealth Enterprises, Pacific Rim Computer Consultants, and Silveril Investments. Neonet also has an impressive array of companies focused on augmentation, including Dorada GeneTech, Emerging Futures, InterScience Inc., Mindstrom Neurotechnologies, Nanoglobe, Nightingales, Pioneer Cybernetics, Suzhou Biotechnology, and Ultra. Their magic division is slim, but existent, and includes Living Touch Studios, Lornet, Talus Point, and T99. Lastly, there are some that don't fit into tidy categories, and those are Asclepius International in medical services, Central Industrial for heavy industry, Everyman Consumer Goods, Minuteman Security, Visionary Design Works, Walker Aero Design, and ZenPet, an awakened animal sale and training company. Now, Neonet has divisions and headquarters on every continent, and the only real news is that Swaraj Verghese has been throwing his weight around on African leaders, trying to establish a power base for himself there. Look for Joseph Mnguni and Izolo Inc. to put a stop to that if it goes much further. Lastly, I should mention Kelidir's Knights of Rage. These are the dragon's personal army. They're active in both the shadows and out of them. Their home base is in Caerleon, along with their master Kelidir. In the beginning, the Knights were a mixed-race African street gang in London. They had particular interest in magic, ancient artifacts, AI, and technomancers, all of which matched Kelidir's interests closely. As such, Kelidir approached them and bought their favor by giving the gang a sacred and ancient Nubian tablet. Since then, the Knights have grown and formed new chapters around Europe, Australia, and Egypt. Kelidir's most trusted knight, Sulayo, has been placed all over the world, often just before massive upheaval or terrorist activity. For the last few years, the Knights have been targeting Horizon in the aftermath of the Technomancer woes. Word of advice, chummers, stay away from them if you can. Now, I've been avoiding talking about the big elephant in the Neonet room, which is Cognitive Fragmentation Disorder, or CFD. The first reason is that the history of CFD, while intimately tied up with Neonet, is simply too large for me to unpack here, so there's another episode coming on CFD soon. Second, it muddies the waters with the other corporations' involvement, and I'm trying to stick to Neonet here, so I'll say this much because I don't think we can move forward without doing so. CFD is like an infection. Nanites override a person's personality, replacing it or co-opting it for its own parasitical purpose. And they do have purpose. Personality, even. Suffice to say that Boston was ground zero for an epidemic outbreak of CFD in 2076. The city went into lockdown, and that has caused no end of turmoil for Neonet. As a result of the Boston lockdown, an internal vote was held to move Neonet's headquarters to St. Louis, right on the border of the UCAS and the CAS. The thinking was that they could capitalize on the border and brand themselves as the truly American megacorp. Unfortunately for them, this four-year project, also a marvel of engineering, would be great if it weren't for all the setbacks. Neonet is dealing with the Boston lockdown, the corporate court breathing down their necks to hold someone accountable for that mess, and a continuing feud between Lofir and Kelidir that goes back to the dragons having a tiff a few years ago. The problem is, the two nations, although they share a border, do not share similar politics. Pretending a corporation can just come along and fix the problems is the height of corporate arrogance. Of course, that isn't stopping politicians on both sides from trying to get all the money they can from Neonet in the meantime, but trust me, this isn't going to go the way they want it to. I know I haven't made such a big deal about it, but the CFD thing is actually weighing Neonet down. A lot. The world is wanting someone to blame for CFD, and right or wrong, public opinion is targeting Neonet. As I mentioned above, while they're projecting a face of strength, much of the company is being sold off at a rapid pace. The majority of shareholders are now at cross purposes, and the agendas are splitting the company. If the corporate court finds Neonet at fault for Boston or CFD, you can kiss Neonet goodbye as a megacorporation. Along the way, however, Neonet is not going quietly. They've begun attacking rival corps to try to spread the blame around, and have been going after Renraku quite heavily, and have even resorted to actively trying to throw mud on Fuchi, which will hurt Neonet, but also damage Shiawase and Renraku in particular. The bottom line is this. The stock prices of Neonet are at their lowest ever. Meanwhile, some of their brands are actually doing well. Look for Erica to spin off, as well as Transys. What will Villiers do? Well, I'm glad you asked. Richard Villiers has been having clandestine meetings with Johnny Spinrad of Spinrad Industries. You may know Johnny as the literal face of the Jet Set crowd, parading about with different models on his arm every week, spending obnoxious amounts of cash on obnoxious things, knowing everyone and somehow remaining liked by everyone despite the skeletons in his closet. In fact, he's one of the few people in the Sixth World better than Villiers at that particular game. I don't want to get into too much of Spinrad's affairs, other than to say that Johnny has been acquiring an awful lot of property lately, buying out rivals, diversifying his holdings, and has arisen to be one of the largest AA corporations on the planet. I don't need to tell you what that means if Spinrad and Villiers get into bed with one another, especially if Villiers can bring over the JRJ Golden Ticket, which would guarantee Spinrad a seat on the corporate court, and a AAA status that he's envied for so long. I also don't need to tell you that those two would be unstoppable, not to mention insufferable, if they ever pointed in the same direction. Sutter Krupp, Ares, Evo, and the Azzies would all be threatened by such a move. Whether or not Villiers can make that happen is anyone's guess, and whether he wants it is even further speculation. And who knows, little crows, maybe Neonet will rebound and be better than ever. I just wouldn't count on it. But there is one thing I would count on, and that is the fact that you have wasted an entirely good slot of time listening to the Neo-Anarchist podcast. The music serving as the background to Audible Anarchy was written by the legend Marshall Parker and reimagined by Uninunium 88. This was the Neo-Anarchist podcast, and I am your host, the Wi-Fi flying high, old but spry, no tie, deep fry, my tie, can't buy, won't die, ice chai, no lie, apple pie, never try, don't ask why, all around great guy, Opti. Enjoy your freedom, because no matter how little you have, the folks in Boston have less.